Hello, good people, and welcome to episode 11 of the Brunswick Beer Collective. And this is a very, very, okay, they're all very, very special these days. I just, it's difficult to find an episode that isn't special. However, this one is a special episode. So I'm Chris Shorten, with me is Paul Christoph.
Guten Tag.
And
I think
you jumped the gun, Paul. And with us, making his triumphant return, is Ben Wilson.
Thank you. Good to be back.
Guten Abend was what I was meant to say.
So you might be wondering why Paul is speaking in a terrible, terrible, terrible German accent. Probably speaking terrible, terrible, terrible German. The answer to that is we are at the... where are we?
We're at the Munich Brauhaus.
Which is
the
on...
Melbourne one, for those people who are listening who aren't in Victoria.
This is a very unique occasion for us because they very kindly emailed us and they said, we have the...
Well, I was talking to somebody from there a few weeks ago and, yeah, they mentioned that Munich Brauhaus was the only sort of venue that was going to be... Or the Munich Brauhauses around Australia are the only venues that are going to have the official Oktoberfest beers direct from Germany. So I was like, well, you know, we record a podcast, it'd be cool to sort of try them and give you guys a bit of a spiel on what you're doing, and they said yes, and here we are.
And opportunism takes over, and here we are. And we, look, I mean, we have much to talk about, but I guess the most important thing is, right now we have many beers to get through. So the first one we have is right in front of me. I have the Hacker 4.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's
Hacker Psycho.
Hacker Sure. It was pronounced to us like when it was delivered, and I said it back a couple of times, you know, trying to remember how to do it. Do you think I remembered it then? No.
A bit of nine is the term you're looking for.
So it's actually written as Hacker, like the regular Mr. Robot sort of way, hyphen PSCHORR. We'd like anyone to tweet us and send us through their videos of how they think they should say it.
To our German fans out there.
We're really sorry. That's all we can say. So, this is our very, very special Oktoberfest episode. And I kind of... Okay, Oktoberfest fascinates me, but it fascinates me. I've never been to Oktoberfest, like in Germany, although I've obviously been to Germany. But the only fact that I can actually remember from Oktoberfest is that, and I don't even know if it's true, maybe it's an urban myth, that the Australian Embassy has a stand at Oktoberfest because so many Australians lose their passports there.
I believe that's true. I've heard that as well. I've been a couple of times, and I've never lost mine, luckily, but I've heard from a few people that have, and they do set it up for the three-week festival.
Mm.
Well, the number of people there.
Even the organisers from Oktoberfest in general, I can't remember exactly, but yeah, when I was there back in 2010. Mm. Yes, 2010. I remember that the there was a very specific system that's set up. It's very like efficient and organised. High anticipation that a lot of people are going to lose a lot of things.
I mean, and the worst part about that is that being the red rag to a bull sort of person that I am, I really now want to go to Oktoberfest just about when my passport is about to expire, just so I can lose it and use that system. I mean, they probably charge like $1,000 for it or something. But the fact that, you know, you can just walk over there and say, yeah, sorry, I lost my passport. Could you just look up all of my records and get me a new one? I mean, it's kind of cool. And it also shows off how utterly incompetent Australians are.
Yes.
Yes. So, before we get into, like, stuff, everyone's Oktoberfest memories, so what do we think of this beer?
Well, I think the thing about Oktoberfest beers, so I remember the first night in Oktoberfest, we drank copious amounts of beer.
Mm.
We're at the Löwenbräu tent. And that was another very thing when we saw some Germans at the Spartanbräu tent. The day after, we'll say, oh, we spent all yesterday at the Löwenbräu tent. I'm like, what? Like, Löwenbräu.
I got served on that one before.
And this went back and forth for about a minute until they were like, ah, Löwenbräu. So now it's really odd because you know it's meant to be pronounced Löwenbräu, but often still, if you say that here, people are like, what are you talking about? You've got to say Löwenbräu.
Which is the odd part about language, really.
Yeah, but anyway, what we think of the beer. So the whole point to remember is, and I remember we woke up, we drank a lot. Mm. We also ate a lot of roast chicken and pretzels. But
that was before the evolution where everyone ate fried chicken and pretzels.
Yeah, chicken and pretzels. But I remember we all woke up the next day and it was just, apart from one girl, who one of our friends who was not a beer drinker at all, who didn't get up until much later in the day, all of us got up surprisingly sprightly in the morning. And, you know, we went back to the grounds there and went on the rides and stuff, and it was all fine. And we were like, wow, what it is about these beers?
Wait, going back a step. Oktoberfest has rides?
Oh, yes. So this is interesting. This is something I never realised.
It's like Movie World.
It's something I never realised until I went there. Think of it's actually very timely, the Royal Show. So insert your state Royal Agricultural Show. It's basically like that, but replace the show bags with beer tents. So there's loads of rides, stalls, you know, fairy floss and things. It's family friendly. It's not at all what you expect.
Yeah, it is like going to a theme park.
Yeah.
Except they serve copious amounts of alcohol. So yet it just makes it even.
Yet there's
even
no dickheads.
Yeah, exactly.
Except for the.
The Australians.
except for the. So it's very interesting there. So you've got all the different tents. So Leuvenbräu tent, very international flavour. They got Spartanbräu, Paulana München. The Hackers score, however you pronounce it. They're sort of they're more German. Paulana is extremely family friendly, so Spartanbräu. And then you've got the Hofbräu tent, which is basically where all the Aussies, Kiwis and Saffers go and get smashed and make fools themselves.
Why is that is it just a Hofbräu?
Well, so I guess it's just where they get attracted to it, because that's where people know. So I had when I was living in Europe, I had no desire to go to Oktoberfest. I thought it's just gonna be full of foreigners getting smashed.
Foreigner.
What we think of Oktoberfest is the Hofbräu House tent.
Oh, like the giant, I assume...
Oh, it's debauchery, it's people getting, like, kicked out, and it's ridiculous. It's like
an old pirate bar.
Yeah, the Germans that we met at the Spartanbräu tent, he was telling us how he almost got knocked out by an Australian guy the previous night in the Hofbräu tent because he inadvertently said something offensive about midnight oil. Which was quite funny. And he was like, so he's very happy to have met us because he had a lot of bad experiences of Australians the night before.
I don't know why that makes me so happy and so sad simultaneously.
He was also very confused when we tried to explain Hogan's Heroes to him. He couldn't understand there was a comedy set in a concentration camp.
Look, I guess when you word it with that sort of premise, it makes sense.
It's like you think about it, you're like, yeah, I suppose it is.
Yeah. So, Ben, what's your memory of Oktoberfest then?
I suppose
completely avoid the original question.
Yeah, I know.
The beer is good, by the way.
The beer is excellent. I really like this beer.
That's the thing. I didn't, going there, I knew it was like, okay, you go there, drink lots of beer. I didn't actually know, before even going, know whether you go round to the different, beer halls in the actual city or whether or not it was actually you go to to the grounds to do it. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, for my first experience, was rocking up. And then amazing grounds and then seeing rides as far as you could see.
and then
pretty much all it involved then from then on was drinking, get a pork roll, some more drinking, then hit some rides and so on. But yeah, and like you said, singing. You do that for pretty much 12 hours and you wake up in the morning, there's no preservatives in the beer, so like you've said, you wake up in the morning and you're tired because you probably went to bed at 3 a.m. But you're like, okay, I'm feeling fairly sprightly, I think I can get back into it again. So.
I think that's the thing, they're not, hoppy, full-flavoured beers. Exactly. These are beers that are designed. They are brewed specifically with the intention that several litres of them will be drunk per person in a day. So they go down super easily, they're light.
They really do go down super easily.
Impression as well is women being able to, or anyone being able to carry about 10 steins of beer.
How the hell?
Ah, yes.
It is amazing.
So tip everyone.
They train for it.
So when we went, it was €18 a stein.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And
two for a tip.
You give a $2 tip. But our guy, I even remember her name, Leuvenbräu tent, Maria. She was so impressive. It was her first time Oktoberfest. So there's these old timers there, these old ladies that have been doing it for decades. And then she was just starting and she was carrying sort of 10 in each hand and
have them stacked on top. It's just
it's really
so
impressive. Yeah. They don't spill any or it's really really cool.
Well, done.
And the singing as well.
The songs, that's the same as you guys before. Yeah, I remember the John Denver song was always one that came up.
Oh, Take Me Home,
Country
Roads.
Sweet,
which is almost like an Australian anthem.
I
don't know why, it just is.
Well, when I was there, it was DJ Otzi, Hey Baby, and Robbie Williams, Angel.
Oh,
some reason that was massive as well.
Yeah,
everyone just gets up, stands on the tables and starts, swaying side to side.
No, I don't need
it's
to
really
be
It's really odd.
Yeah.
It's just a lot of fun.
All right, so back to the beer. I mean, I genuinely enjoy this. I think it's not what I expected for a Oktoberfest beer. I kind of expected the whole wall of Pilsner.
It does have a bit more flavour for me. Like, it's... Yeah, I kind of expect, like, the power, like, lighter beers, whereas this... tastes a bit more full-bodied, a bit more... You know, sort of the caramel.
I think it's beautiful.
This one definitely has a bit of caramel to it.
Yeah.
What do we give it?
Well, I think... To me, to be honest, I think in advance it's almost like a good Oktoberfest beer is a solid 3.5. Yeah, you definitely would drink it again. That's the intention of it.
Good point.
It's not a amazing, you know, groundbreaking beer. They just do exactly what they're meant to do, and they do it well. They're all Christoph's scale. I can say that right now.
See, I was going to say this might be a 4, but
you'd be wrong.
Thank you, Jeff. Jeff is absent this week, so Paul is filling in for Jeff.
Yep.
Alrighty, so next up on the list we have, we're drinking a Hofbräu.
Yes, so...
Hofbräu, whatever.
The dickhead Antipodean beer of choice.
Exactly.
Saying that, no offence to Hofbräu, though, I've actually been to the Hofbräu house, the hall in Munich, and it's very cool. And it's full of... they have an interesting system there, so you basically... I'm sure the others probably do it too, where you have your tankard. And so now, correct me if I'm wrong, I think like a stein is 1 litre, but a tankard is the like the porcelain ones.
It's
the other way around.
That's right.
Yeah. So
all right, so we're just gonna ask our friendly bartender. So we need fact on sorry, what was your question, Paul?
So, stein is the glass 1 litre.
Yes.
But we have that correct. So, it's tankard is the ones that are made out of like
porcelain.
Yes.
Tankard made out of porcelain, it's nice made out of glass.
And what size is it? What 1 litre. Is that one? Is that a 1 litre as well?
1 litre as
well. So, I was correct.
Yeah.
Awesome. So, actually...
Awesome.
Thank you.
So,
I actually have a Hofbräu tankard at home. And anyway, I was there, and what you do is, if you're a regular... You can actually get your own, you get your personalised tankard, whether it's from there or wherever, and you just have it there behind the bar.
Oh!
So you rock up and they just get your tankard for you?
I'm flipping this around the other way, because there are other things to talk about, but flipping this around the other way, just while we're talking tankards, with like the lids on them and things like that. So when I was at this, when I was back in Toronto, like, you know, a month ago or whatever, that I went to this place that was a barbershop by day and like a blues and bar by night. And it was really cool. But they also gave you like beer while you were getting a haircut.
Very good.
And they were all in tankards.
Huh.
Because it was the easiest way to keep hair out of the beer.
Yeah, it makes with a lid on it.
And though that the guy who was working there was telling us a story how basically the problem was with him was that he had to send away somewhere to get the tops for the tankards. And they kept on breaking. So, like, they cost a fortune, but they weren't durable, so they kept on breaking. So they're just... Every tankard you'd see was just covered in glue from how many times I had to keep it going because it cost so much to replace.
Or, like, keep cups... cups with lids and straws? Straws?
Where
even just in a bottle.
Yeah, a bottle.
Where was your logic ages ago? Anyway.
I was going to say make up a joke about Canadians, but I have nothing.
No. Canadians were awesome. And they've got a cool Prime Minister now, which is...
Yeah, well, our Prime Minister's meeting with our deputy... opposition leader.
Oh, Uncle
Bill.
He's
flying over today. He's meeting with Justin.
Excellent.
To talk about how all the conservative shit that's happening in our country. And
what, as in like how Justin solved it, which was basically waiting for Harper.
We're going over there and saying, it's as if we've still got Harper.
God, Harper was terrifying. Sorry to all of our Harper supporters. Actually, not sorry. Anyway, so while we're drinking this Hofbräu, I was going to say Hofbräu or whatever. The Hof. Ben, you have been in Vietnam.
Yes, I have been.
I know, what an amazing segue. Yeah,
exactly. And it was spectacular. And surprisingly, good for beer.
Which I did not expect at all.
It's a big change, because I was there in 2013, and there was like no craft beer.
Yeah, before I left, I was chatting to Jeff, and he's like, I was like, you know, what's a beer like? Am I going to find, you know, any pale ales, IPAs? He's like, pretty much all you'll find is lagers, which for the weather over there was between 35, 40 degrees every day. So a lager is actually quite refreshing and quite nice. And pretty much every city has its own lager. So Hanoi, beer Saigon, beer Halong. And yeah, there's plenty of different ones to try, but after a while you do sort of get sick of it. As we made our way down south, we set up in the north. As we made our way down south, we hit a place called Nha Trang, which is a very, I'm not sure if you've been there, Paul, but it's a very strange place. So you turn up and you get to the beach, and you look around, and you would not know that you're in Vietnam.
How so?
Every person on the beach is Russian.
Really? Whoa!
So apparently they had a military base there back in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of Russians, like, obviously were living there at the time, and a lot of them still come over to holiday in Vietnam. There's actually a flight from Moscow to Nha Trang.
What, direct?
Direct. So people go there to holiday,
crazy.
Which is really strange. Like, we couldn't work it out for quite a while, so we had to look it up.
It's such a cool, weird cultural artifact.
Yeah, I know. So you go to the beach, and it's like, all you see is Russians, and then you go like into the streets of Nha Trang, and then you sort of get the locals and everything else. But so probably going away from it a bit. But as we're walking around one day, it was at night time, and I was talking to Seeker, and she said, we'll have one more. So we're like walking down the road trying to find somewhere to drink.
Oh yeah, we've all...
you all one more.
Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, Steve Jobs may have like popularised it, but I feel like we've definitely, as drinkers, we've made it our own. Yeah.
But then, walking along and there's a big sign in, neon sign, beer. I'm like, I like beer. Get closer. Brewery. I like a brewery. And then we walk inside. I'm like, my eyes went up. And Seeker's like, okay, we can go, yes.
I love how it was kind of like, beer, could you be more specific? Brewery. Yeah.
Very good.
And so we walk in and, I get served. And they said, oh, by the way, it's happy hour. So
every beer is 50 cents.
three beers for the price of two. Okay, sure, I want to try a few of the different ones.
Mm.
And what I didn't realise were it was three pints for the price of two. So one beer turned into three pints.
How much was two pints?
Oh, it's about $5. So it was like a porter, red ale.
Holy crap! Ale.
So, and they were all like, so this place is called Pankow. So, very Russian influence. And all three beers were pretty decent. So that was a nice find, and then I did actually look up another one called Louisiana Brew House, which is
clearly a very Vietnam place. Yeah,
there's a lot of on the beach, and it was beautiful.
There's a lot of expats over there now that it's sort of really everything's opened up, and the US and all the free trade agreement stuff and all that. Like, even when I was in Auckland a couple of weeks ago, I was talking to my two friends over there who you've both met in Wellington a couple of years ago, and they knew of somebody that had moved over to Vietnam and had just set up a brewery.
Yeah.
And it's like it's just taken off. Even kind of like here, New South Wales, think that, it's a good example.
Oh,
18 months ago, 2 years ago, there was not much going on there really. And now it's ridiculously big scene.
Yeah, it's huge. And that's what it feels like is going on in Vietnam. And at the moment, I think it's only in a couple of areas. So after we left Nha Trang, we went down to Ho Chi Minh. And I think that's where it's exploding at the moment.
Yeah.
There were a few breweries, not all of them you could go to drink, but there was one in particular called Pasture Street. And they said they had like 12 beers on tap, and it was all really interesting stuff as well. So they had, did you ever eat dragon fruit while you were in Thailand?
Yeah.
Vietnam. Yeah. So they actually had a dragon fruit gozo, which was tasty.
And pink or white dragon fruit.
Wow.
The flesh was white. and then they had a barley wine, an imperial chocolate stout, an imperial porter.
This is amazing.
A saison. This amazing range, and all of them were fantastic. Especially the one I bought home.
Home.
Wait
till Saturday.
Yeah, we will help you drink at some point.
So this imperial chocolate stout won the
Beer World Cup for chocolate stouts, which I don't know how you enter into a Beer World Cup. But
look, I mean, it's interesting about that, but I really want to know more about the fact that there's a Beer World Cup.
Isn't that kind of like these awards, like when you see like Stella or whatever, and they've won like 20 gold medals in different awards, and you're like, what's going on here?
Yeah.
Well, I would guess the gold is one of those like chocolate gold things.
You can eat it.
Gold foil.
It's
better.
What can you do with real gold? Nothing.
Exactly.
But I think it just goes to show, I guess, our preconceptions and misconceptions about everywhere, to be honest. Even where that beer tour went, you know, the Guinness question, I knew, but you know, largest consumers of Guinness out in the world, Nigeria, biggest beer in the world, China. We have these ideas in our heads, and we are very Western Europe, US, Australia focused.
We have our own bubble, and we like our bubble.
A friend of ours, so the company I work for, has just expanded to Asia, and one of my colleagues has started working on a client in Bangkok.
Mm.
And he sent me a message today. He's like, you need to get a stint here. He said, the craft beer and food scene here is like Melbourne / Brunswick on steroids.
What?
Yeah. And I've never thought Thailand craft beer, but you know, clearly, and after your story, Vietnam, clearly there are loads of breweries in Bangkok doing really cool things.
See, to me that seems like, you know, we all need to find some cheap Jetstar flights and make all that happen.
Yeah, well, we can record from there at least.
Yeah.
As I was leaving, I went to another bar called Malt, and they had like a lot of the local stuff on tap. And I was talking to this American guy, and he's like, oh, yeah, my friend who lives here just started up his own brewery, like a little one out of his like sort of garage sort of thing. He's like, yeah, at the same time, they're opening up another bar, or just opened up at that weekend, and going to have 30 taps. 30 taps of craft beer. And I'm like, what you mean? It's like, I only had another couple of days. But
so there's a bit of a challenge to our, not challenge, a request of our listeners. If anyone wants to send through any of your favourite craft breweries or brew pubs in Southeast Asia, let us know. That might influence where we, some of us take our next holiday.
Yeah. Look, I mean, I'm just, I think I'm just blown away by, I mean, you know my love of craft beer and how it sort of just sort of, I love the fact that everyone is just out there making it.
Yeah.
But like it was the same in I was telling Ben earlier about how my favorite local back in Greenpoint in Brooklyn had suddenly become a brewery, just within like the 2 years since I'd been away, and it's just sort of like the fact that all these places are making their own beer is just phenomenal, really.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say craft beer is very democratic, but of course I guess in Vietnam that craft beer is very communist. I mean. But regardless, either it's you're doing it for, you know, you get out there, you're doing it and doing your own business and starting your own thing, or you're creating great beer for the people. No matter what your form of government is, craft beer is for everybody.
But alrighty, so we should finish up with the Hofbräu
and move back,
move on to the next
away
one
from Asia and back to Germany.
Exactly, we should return to Germany. The Hofbräu is just. It is. I mean, Paul, you pretty much hit the nail on the head here. I mean, I knew about Hofbräu mostly because it's. I think I would have bought it. I think I actually own a Stein.
Well, they've got a thing in Melbourne.
Yeah,
it was the first one outside of Germany. First one outside of Germany.
See, I reckon. So
like in the 70s.
So I think I mentioned it before how my parents dumped a load of beer glasses on me when they came to visit, like last time.
Oh yes.
Because they said, Chris, we're tired of having all this shit in our house. And, you know, and that they're strong words from my parents, but, you know, I guess we'd got to that point. I think I actually have a Hofbräu glass from, like, it would have been from Dan Murphy's, when Dan Murphy's was sort of giving away glasses with box sets of things.
Well, so, your glass story gives me a good segue into this next beer. Because I may or may not have a Stein from Spartanbräu, the Spartanbräu Oktoberfest tent in my house.
But you purchased, of course.
Well, however, this one is actually named after you.
I thought the Spartan was next.
No, the next one is actually the Paulana.
Yeah, the Paulana. Paulana München. The most family-friendly tent in Oktoberfest.
But what makes it so family-friendly? I mean, how do you make a beer tent family-friendly? I guess that's my question.
No, just
small glasses to keep.
Purely from observation, I remember noticing, of all the tents I went to, that was definitely the one that was just full of, you know, with families hanging out.
See,
more so than any of the others.
And that's, I guess that's always an interesting thing, because when you look at somewhere, something like a, not necessarily, I guess if you look at an Australian pub, for example, there are so many of them where that you say, I would never want to bring my family here, I'd never want to bring kids here. And that's just how it seems to operate.
And that's the thing, I mean, people talk about, you know, European drinking culture. You know, Europe's quite a... Mm. Again, it's that thing that, like we're saying with Asia, it's sort of, you know, whenever something's described as European, you're like, well, geez, there's, you know, what? Yeah. I mean, like, they're Hungary, French, German, like, Scandinavian. Like, I mean, Europe's not exactly one monoculture. But the drinking culture, you do notice this through a lot of European cultures, is that children are... I remember you go to France and there's, you know, juice in basically what looks like champagne bottles. And children are introduced to alcohol at a very early age. You know, I've been to Portugal where people are street drinking, and there's just not that alcohol-fueled violence that we see here.
Of course, in saying that, flipping that around further, although I have been told off for bringing this up, that when I was in, like, pure observation, when I was in Moscow, and there were the... I remember leaving my hotel at, like, 10 in the morning or something and going to the train station, and there were people like leaning against like the concession stand outside the train station just drinking beer at 10 in the morning, and that was like the complete opposite thing. But it's a strange world in terms of alcohol. I don't know what it all means.
It's all cultural. Alcohol is not the problem. Mm.
It's how you bring your children, like your kids up to, like, you know, to drink alcohol. If it's all about, like, you can't have it and you have it when you're 18, then as soon as you're 18 or you're like 16, because you can, someone's giving it to you on the side, you're going to smash it down. Yeah. And like, whereas you learn to actually, like, drink, like, you know, okay, have a glass here or there, and be held responsible for your own actions. Like, parents will go, okay, yeah, you can have a beer when I'm in your presence, you know, one or two. And then you learn to, like, okay, I can go out and have a couple of drinks. I don't have to go out and have 10 and get smashed. Yeah. So
I mean, you can, but you really shouldn't.
Say, you know, exactly. It's easy to say, you know, we're going to lock down, rah, 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 you know, then you've got Sydney's lockout laws.
Yeah.
It's a lot harder to say, okay.
Don't get us started on that.
Okay, all sides of government, this is a cultural problem. Let's come up with a plan. And you know what? We're not really going to see the effects of this for another 20 years. The kids that are being born today, when they turn 18, that's when we'll see the effects. That doesn't fit into a four-year election cycle. But anyway,
we went all Alan Alda from MASH there. So, flipping it back. So, firstly, we're all finishing up our Hofbräus. Because at the end of this, I feel like we need to be able to say, if someone can... I mean, I think people should drink all of the Oktoberfest beers.
Yes.
Yes, I mean, you should.
But what if...
I've already got 3 badges on tap just from checking in 2 of them.
Freaking untapped.
Onto it.
But I think the question we'll have to ask at the end of the night is... or the end of this episode is, if you could only drink one, which one would you drink? So keep that in mind, people.
Okay.
So this is a Hofbräu, which is, look, it is based on the stuff we've been given. It is a Marzen.
A Hofbräu is a Marzen, yes.
Yeah.
Well, I think we're drinking all Marzens.
They're all.
It also has malts, yeast, and spice. Mm.
I also like the bit about the sparkling fluffy. Creamy.
Excuse me? No, you're looking at the wrong one. We're not to the Löwenbräu yet.
Oh, yes, I should look at the right one. That would help.
Anyway, the next one on our list is Paulana. Paulana. It's Paulana.
Yeah.
Which, well, it's also Oktoberfest. It's also 6%. Sorry, 6%. Actually, all of these ones are... The lowest is 5.8.
What's interesting is there are actually 6 breweries that are allowed to make beers at Oktoberfest, and we have 5 here.
It'd be
interesting to find out, one, who's the other one, and two, why did these guys not get the...
I'm more curious, and this is probably the bigger question, why are there only 6 breweries allowed to make beer?
Gotta be something traditional.
Okay. But some guy's granddad, like someone else's granddad, or something.
So even though these guys are the only place that have the official Oktoberfest beers, there are many places around. I suppose Hofbräu must have.
Maybe
they don't. Maybe they're separate.
They'll just probably have their single one on.
That's the thing. A lot of places around Melbourne will have very good German beers from the breweries that brew, but they won't have the exact Oktoberfest beers.
Okay, that's true. I can believe that. Alrighty. So this is the Paulaner. And
Well, they make one of my favourite wheat beers. Which is not what this is, but that's what they're... I think that... Don't quote me on this. I haven't researched it. I think that is their sort of claim to fame, is their wheat beer.
Okay.
Because I know that they make an amazing wheat beer. They actually had a bar in London, in Fulham.
Really?
At one stage. Yeah.
Damn.
It changed ownership while I was there, so it's not a German bar anymore, but it was a German bar that had some kind of link to Paulina at one stage. Useless fact to them, right? Well, to be honest, everything we said have been mostly useless facts, which may not even be facts. Might just be useless.
I mean, it's more... Exactly. It's the bigger question of, you know, maybe they're just facts or maybe they're just useless. I don't know. Do we need to have, like, a divide here?
Four seasons in, our listeners know what to expect.
All right. So we have the Paulina, which is... Look, it is a 3.5. It's definitely a 3.5.
Yeah. It's a family-friendly beer.
Yeah, it's a family-friendly. But I feel this... Like, this one... It's very similar to the Hofbräu that we just had.
Yeah.
I just find the first one was so different to
I know, and
to
it,
the last
it,
couple
it,
compared it, to like what you expect from.
It was the one
that
stood out.
Yeah.
Well, it kind of set the. I guess it set sort of like a bar, not necessarily a bar, but set an expectation, I suppose.
Yeah. It was actually quite a surprise, the first one. Like it's not what you expect as a traditional German style that you get it like an Oktoberfest.
Right. And I mean, okay, so the Paulina and the next one we have next to it is Paul's favourite.
That is
Spaten.
The Spaten. Spaten.
Is it Spaten? But there's no R.
Spaten brow.
Everything's brow, but
Spaten brow.
And you, if you want to know where that name comes, you need to look at their logo. It is literally like two spades crossing each other. So I assume in English that is spade brew.
Okay, that's actually pretty cool. But wait, does that mean Spaten mean...
Spaten must mean spade.
Are you sure it's pronounced as Spaten?
Well, I assume so.
We shall ask
Spaten
our bartender
doesn't sound
when
German
we're
German to me.
Spaten,
but there's just no R, that's it.
But there's no O in
excuse
Munich
me.
Either. It's
is it Spaten or Spaten?
Spaten.
Yeah.
Spaten.
There you go. Right. See, I just
made fun
of Paul.
I'm right again.
Yeah. I'm tired of Paul being
right. I'm tired
of
being right.
Sorry, mate.
Could we get the Leuvenbräu after this?
Sure, yeah, I guess so.
Thank you. So, we have the Spaten, and if you've heard on our oversized microphone, we will have the Leuvenbräu soon.
Yeah. I'll show you all the glass on Saturday.
See, now I'm a little bit worried. I mean, that sounds like you're trying to fight me in some sort of, you know, East London sort of way.
Fine.
Well, I'll bring along my Paulina.
Yes.
I acquired mine while I was over there as well.
In that case, I will bring along what I think is my Hofbräu thing, but may actually be a Leuvenbräu thing. I'm not sure which.
Well, I think they build it into the,
20 euros that you're
paying there, yeah.
Alrighty, so we've just had the Paulina and we have the Spaten. So, alright, so up until this point, people, what, if someone is standing at a bar, what should they be buying?
The.
Because, I
the
mean.
The first what, one, the Hacker Shore.
Hacker Shore, yeah. I definitely give my vote to Hacker Shore.
Flavor wise, that's the one. The other three are all interchangeable, to be honest.
Yep.
Actually, strangely though, the Spaten has a different flavour to the Paulina.
Oh, the Paulina. It's got its own badge.
Hey!
Munich's favourite beer, supposedly.
But, I mean, who is speaking to Munich?
It says Paulina USA. There you go. That's why they've got a special badge.
Okay.
So to any of our American listeners, it's probably Paulina maybe easier to find than some of the others.
But, so clearly they have like tentacles in...
I suppose Leuvenbräu would be as well, because that's one that... Like, as an Australian, that's, like, the one that I knew before going over there.
And our last beer has just arrived, which is the Leuvenbräu.
Oh, and it's got a...
It's got an awesomely non-Leuvenbräu label, but that's okay because we're having, like, smaller things. So, what's interesting about Leuvenbräu, and I feel like...
Lion Brewery. Though not Lion.
No, not Lion Nathan, but definitely
Lion Brewery.
Well, I mean, okay, so I feel like everyone will...
That's the logo. It's a lie.
Oh, yeah, lie, yeah. Okay, yeah.
Everyone will probably have their own story around Livenbrough. I mean, for me, it was... Like, at Dan Murphy's, it was like...
Lowenbrow.
Anyway, at Dan Murphy's, it was the beer that you sort of... You found, and it seemed exotic because it had the blue label, but it was also cheap enough you could afford.
Mm.
But strangely, so when I was in... So I've got, like, the, you know, Livenbrough Stein or whatever the equivalent is. By the way, when I was buying Livenbrough, I didn't know it was called Livenbrough. I called it Lowenbrow. And so did everyone else, which was weird and strange. Until I was told off by a German guy. But anyway, what's strange about Livenbrough is the fact that, despite the fact that all of the coasters we're looking at right now are also all Livenbrough, but when I used to live in Vancouver, which is obviously in Canada. Anyway, when I used to live there, that if you want to buy alcohol in Canada, you have to go to basically what they call BC Liquor. And BC Liquor is just a giant store, government-owned, government-run, where you buy all of your booze. The cheapest thing there was cans, 500ml cans of Livenbrough. Like, no matter where I went, that was what I had to do. I mean, that was pre... You know, there was only, like, one or two craft breweries around there at the time. But that was, like, that was the first thing you found.
Well, do you want to know why it's so widely available? Probably why all the coasters here are that. You want to guess who owns them?
Lion Nathan.
No.
Asahi.
AB and Bev. So, and Anheuser-Busch.
Oh.
So, Budweiser.
Budweiser, yeah.
Well, no way.
Yeah.
When I grew up in Sydney, and, like, growing out in my early 20s...
Well, none of us really grew up.
Like I said, it's the only one that I knew pre-going to Oktoberfest.
Well, yeah, like, that, if we went out in the city and you wanted to get German beer, it's like, that's where you went. You go get your schnitzel and your Stein of beer. And that was, like, that's been around, I'm assuming, you know, 15, 20 years.
That's the thing. It's the pros and cons thing, isn't it? It's like, so as people, we are all lucky enough to have travelled extensively. But if you've, you know, only in... If you've only really... lived and spend most of your time in the country you're born in, the fact of the matter is not generally you're not going to be able to find these smaller breweries outside of their country of origin.
Yeah.
If you're owned by AB and Bev,
you might.
So it's one of those things. Does it, yes, it's not independent, but it's accessible to a lot more people around the world.
Look,
I've never really thought about it in that way until now, but...
No. Well, look, that's what we're about. You know, opening ideas, opening doors, opening windows, probably more likely. All right, so the one thing I will say about the Livenbrough is that it is super, super, super fresh. Like, it really does taste fresh.
And I can confirm that you can drink liters of several liters of this all day and not be hungover the next day. So make sure you're eating your chicken and pretzels.
Or your pork rolls. That was my choice. But yeah, this definitely tastes the lightest of all the beers.
It doesn't even taste like anything.
No, it goes down.
Well, AB and Bev.
Winning.
It's the Budweiser of German beers.
But obviously, I assume this is like some sort of exclusive Oktoberfest version.
No, this is the Oktoberfest. These are all the These are only brewed in September for Oktoberfest.
Which I still think is kind of awesome, really.
Yeah, and
what is
that, though? September?
Yes. Why is it September over October?
Yeah, we could look it up, but...
I remember looking this up a while ago, and it was like, everyone's going, I'm telling people at home, I'm going to Oktoberfest. I'm going the middle weekend in September. So I think it's originally started in October, way back in, I think it was like in the 1800s. But then over time, it was like a small festival of like about a week or so. But then they wanted to expand it. And because of us like being in Europe, September is much warmer. They decided to actually extend it into September. But I suppose now they've got to have it so that it still finishes in October. That's why it usually finishes the last weekend, the first weekend in October.
So do you know that or are you guessing it?
No, I know that.
Yeah, because that is, yeah.
Yeah.
So
because of the warmer weather. So you stay out at night time and it's sort of like...
The first Oktoberfest was held in 1810 in honour of Bavarian Crown Prince Ludwig's marriage to Princess Therese von Schassenhildburghausen.
Apologies to all their German listeners for that terrible pronunciation.
I think Hildburghausen's probably quite close.
Hindenburg Carlson.
So, I mean, I think...
But anyway, yeah, they began on October 12th and ended on October 17th with a horse race.
Makes sense.
And then they repeated every year and then moved it to September because and extended it because people loved it and there was better weather in September.
See, I think the better solution would have been to actually just change all the months.
Or call it Septemberfest.
Exactly. No. They should just move the months back one... Like, back
I'll
a month.
The bugs, yeah.
So no, then dude. October becomes a new September. That's a much better solution.
September. Septemberfest.
Or October.
We should start a Smarch Fest.
Smarch.
Because, of course, lousy Smarch weather in the Northern Hemisphere, but in the Southern Hemisphere, yeah. It's beautiful Smarch weather.
Yeah.
One thing I do want to raise is that coming back from... This is a bumper episode, but it's a special episode, so it's fine.
Coming... If you're wondering, people, this is one of the few times when, anyone other than me can see how long we're going.
No, yeah, it's right there. 40 minutes and 42 seconds at the moment. But anyway, that's something you can edit, because there's no need to tell people about that.
It's not going anywhere.
Yeah.
As you were.
I remember coming back from Munich, and coming back from Europe, coming back to Australia, and everyone had their Oktoberfest things in October. And I was like, no, like, why? Like, it's not the way it is. And I've got to say, this year, I've been very impressed that most of the venues that are doing Oktoberfest things are doing them now, in September. They've aligned themselves correctly, which is, it's cool. Mm. It's more authentic. It's cool.
Alrighty. So what we need to lock down now is, firstly...
Details,
but... Alright, so... What are we... If you were looking to celebrate Oktoberfest, which beer would you choose? And you only had one option. Maybe you're driving.
So, I'd get a Hackershaw.
Hackershaw, yeah. And if you can fit it in?
If I can fit it in, Spartan Brow, Leuven Brow, just for nostalgic reasons.
Benny?
I'm going the same. Hackershaw, like definitely. I think that's the one with the most flavour. It's actually quite a quality beer, which surprised me. And then if I had a, could have another one, like Paul Nostalgia, I'm going with Paul and Arm.
Nice. Look, I mean, I would just go to the Hacker. I'm not going to even try the other half because I think it's just a superb beer. Yeah. And
I just think it sets itself out amongst the rest of them. Like, yeah. The others are the same. And that's not to say they're not good. They're all quality, but
if you want something different for your non-session beer, I suppose that's probably your answer.
Yeah, get on it.
And even then, the Hacker would even work as a session beer, just not the one you expect.
Exactly.
So important details.
Yeah.
Important details.
Oktoberfest at Munich Brauhaus kicks off at 6 p.m. this Friday, 16th September, which I believe is when the episode will be released. So if you're listening to it on release day.
Maybe you're in your office. 6 o'clock tonight. Maybe you're running with your dog. Maybe you're just running.
They are actually really going hardcore here. 6 weeks until October 30.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
But for me, the most important thing is that, it's pretty much the only place in Sydney. I mean, there's Munich Brauhaus in Sydney. Mm-hmm. And I think there may be one in Perth, but don't quote me on that.
There is
a German themed bar from a group, a large group in Perth. I just don't know if it is. UPG.
That was gloriously specific. Go on.
But if you do have a Munich Brauhaus in your city, you probably should have researched this. But you can you know if it's there, and you can.
You have Google people.
It is the only place that actually has the official Oktoberfest breweries on tap. Beers on tap.
Mm.
So you go to other places and you'll get beers from the. You can go to the other venues and get beers brewed by the Oktoberfest breweries. But if you want the actual Oktoberfest beers as they are in real Oktoberfest in Munich, Munich Brauhaus in Australia is where you need to come. So
very special.
And given how much work that took for Paul to actually say all that, you can understand that we have actually been drinking the beers that we're claiming to be drinking.
Yeah.
It's a very important statement here. So.
Oh, and another thing. They also make their own sausages here.
Which is kind of awesome.
So you can have them, or you can have a schnitzel.
The schnitzel is pretty good.
Schnitzels and sausages are the two things that they're big enough for this. So we're going to try them after this. You can read about it on the City Lane. We're going to do a little post. But everyone likes schnitzels and sausages, right?
That's the door you need to knock on.
And pretzels are a given.
So, people, this has been our very incredibly special, because everything is special.
Very incredibly long.
I know. Episode about Oktoberfest. We have recorded live at the Munich Brauhaus in South Wharf, Melbourne. We have been the Brunswick Beer Collective. I have been Chris Shorten. With me has been Ben Wilson.
Thank you.
And with me have been Paul Christoph.
Danke.
And we will expect you all to be drinking excessive amounts of German beer when we talk to you next time. Thank you.